and welcome to a new episode of the Between the Posts podcast. And for this week, we went for a slightly different approach when it comes to picking the matches, because this time we asked the podcast listeners to select a match. And the first one to react was somebody who said Liverpool against Brighton. And yeah, we were kind of happy with that. My name is Erik Elias, and with me here to discuss Liverpool against Brighton, also of Between the Posts, José Pérez. José, welcome.
Hello, Erik, and hello, everyone. I've been so hyped about this game. Well, I thought it was going to be good. We saw the game. It was even better than I expected. I spent even like an extra hour more than usual doing the analysis because there are so many details to cover here. And first of all, I would just like to send thanks to our listener, Gabriel Guzman, who is the one who recommended this game and who saved us from the terror of having to watch that United versus Spurs game. I really did not want to cover that.
Yeah, but it was a fun approach. Maybe we should do it more often. This time we chose that approach because it was not a super, super interesting weekend. As you said earlier, the biggest game was Man U against Spurs. Yeah, that was awful. So good how we did it this way.
I am pretty happy about what we did this time. We covered two teams that are really, really solid tactically, and that gave us a game with so, so much content to talk about.
Sure. So let's just start with it. I'll do Liverpool. As always, 4-3-3 shape. Not much to see in terms of lineup. We had Alisson in goal, as always. Fullbacks, as you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold and Robertson, as always. In the center, Konaté with Van Dijk, which is quite new. They were playing together for the third time together, Konaté with Van Dijk. Is Konaté slowly starting to take over the center-back role from Matip or Joe Gomez? Who knows? It makes sense, even though Konaté has to get used to the defensive style of Liverpool, which was on show today, but we'll talk about that a lot, I guess. In midfield, we had a lot of injuries. Fabinho, Thiago, Harvey Elliott, he was out for a long time. So we had Henderson as the six, and then Curtis Jones on the left side of midfield, and Naby Keita on the right, and then up front, you know them, Salah, Firmino, and Mane. So not a lot to see there, though we have to note that there are differences in the midfield and in centre-back position. José, what about Brighton? Because we have a formation change there.
Yes. So Brighton, just to give some background to the listener, are right now fifth in the league table. Their results recently had not been that great. A number of draws, a big loss last time against Manchester City in what was a game that was more difficult than what it seemed. Even Guardiola admitted that in the interview. Again, it doesn't help that right now they had to face Liverpool and City back-to-back in the league, going through their lineup this time. So a lot of the time, Brighton likes to use a back three. This time, they decided to go with a back four. Reasons for it? Not entirely sure. Maybe Potter wanted to commit more men forward for possession and pressing. The thing with the back three approaches is that in some ways it makes it easier for Brighton to play out of the back. Yes, but then when they have to keep the ball for longer periods of time, it doesn't work out as nicely. So my hypothesis is that this 4-2-3-1 shape is something that Potter chose thinking about possession. He wanted his team to keep the ball more often and defend with the ball a bit more. And there are a couple decisions that show that. So let's just go through the lineup. The most important bits, the center backs, Lewis Dunk and Duffy. Then interestingly enough, the fullbacks here are an old acquaintance of Dutch football, Joel Veltman, and an acquaintance from Spanish football, Marco Correa, as the fullbacks, which is an interesting setup.
Right, because Veltman is actually a center back. He can play right back, but he's more a center back. And Cucurella was more of a midfield winger profile. So they have two fullbacks who are not really fullbacks.
Well, the thing with Cucurella is always weird because he did play as a fullback with the Spanish team, but definitely his last few years in the Spanish league were as a midfielder. So I
Getafe,
was... Getafe and Eibar, yes. So I was a bit concerned when I saw the signing, but it looks like he's doing pretty well. He's fitting pretty well at Brighton in left back, especially because they use him really aggressively. And I think that's kind of the logic in this fullback pairing, in that Veltman is the more conservative fullback and Cucurella is the really aggressive fullback. Then the midfield, Yves Bissouma returns to the team. Moura stays after a good game against City. And then we saw an interesting presence in midfield. So one of Brighton's new signings this season, Enoch Mbeumo from Zambia. He was signed from Salzburg this summer, had a slow start, struggled to fit with the team, had a few injuries, but he had some promising games versus Manchester City and against Leicester City this midweek. And he was giving a start here. Really good game too. Really active, dynamic player who presses a lot and attacks the box a lot. And as the forwards, this was maybe the biggest surprise. The usual striker, Neil Maupay, was benched. And instead, Leandro Trossard, Belgian, played as the lone striker. And this, again, is another decision from Potter focused on possession. So this is them with the double pivot, with Lallana and with Trossard. They wanted to keep the ball for more time while still having... And actually, Motor is another one who's essentially a midfield. So the decision here was Potter cramming the center with more midfielders and then having March, Cucurella, and occasionally Trossard as the runners going in behind. But really focused on possession this time, Potter and Brighton.
Yeah, and Lallana playing a bit further than he normally does. So this game starts, and in line with the overall match, immediately we have action, and it's fun because we have two big chances in the first 5 minutes. In the second minute, it's a really good pass from Trossard, who started well and would continue to play a really good match. And then that guy, Solly March, makes a really good run off the shoulder of Robertson, actually. And I thought Konaté was a bit out of position there for the first time to commit for the defensive line. And then Alisson Becker had a massive save, so that was in the second minute. And then we knew, okay, guys, let's buckle up because it's going to be good. But then afterwards, I was like, okay, well, all the momentum is killed because 1 minute later, Liverpool actually scores the opener in a quite, how should I put it, everyone's quality came to the fore there because Van Dijk had a 60-yard pass for Salah. Salah played a one versus one with Cucurella, who we know is not a pure, pure defender, but okay. Salah cut inside, lays it off for Henderson, and Henderson shoots it in from the edge of the box. So 3 minutes, two big chances, and 1-0 Liverpool.
Yeah, what I find funny about that goal is what the heck is your six doing at the edge of the box shooting, like running shooting into the edge of the box like that? It's which is kind of the trend that we'll see throughout the whole game. Henderson, in many ways, was playing more as a box-to-box player than as an actual six.
That was fun.
It made Liverpool's possession game, like the mobility of Henderson from the sixth position, actually made Liverpool's possession game more fluid and really fun, but it did have a defensive impact, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah, maybe he switched off for a bit in his mind, or it was on purpose, I don't know. Yeah, talk a bit about how Liverpool dominated the possession in the opening stages, but also a bit about Brighton tactics and the aggressive fullback positioning over there.
Yes, so I think this is kind of common in Graham Potter tactics. He uses very aggressive fullback positioning. And I would say that in this case, he set up something very purposeful in that he wanted to bait the Liverpool front three to go and press. Okay, they go and press your center backs and they even go press until the keeper, until Sanchez. Then he puts in the left midfielder, Motor, to kind of occupy Trent. And then really wide, you have Cucurella. And the thing is that because Liverpool's midfield was frankly not good off ball this evening, you kept falling into this problem where Cucurella was always free to receive the ball. And that kind of made him an easy outlet for Brighton to bypass the Liverpool press and to get the ball easy to Cucurella. Then Cucurella could get a pass to Trossard. And that's where a lot of Brighton's attack started. So, and in this case, it's really all about fullbacks. That being said, Liverpool also did their own thing. They were really good in possession. And while I think Brighton was good at going through the Liverpool press, they still fell a couple times. There was kind of a big chance at the 15th minute where Liverpool instead of pressing high. And it's interesting that they didn't do this more often. Liverpool pressed high most of the time, but in this situation, 15th minute, they actually stayed deeper and tried to set up more of a pressing trap. So they stayed deeper. They tried to bait a pass from the center back to Veltman. And then Mané recovers the ball and they end up with a counter that ends in a big Firmino chance. It's interesting that Liverpool did not decide to do that approach and stay deeper and instead opted to press most of the time throughout this game. Really aggressive pressing.
Yeah, which kind of made sense against Brighton's possession game. And I think Liverpool did really well in the first half with pressing. If we look at the flow of the match, as you described it earlier, that's how it went. But we have to say as well that pretty early on, it was 2-0 for Liverpool. And I'm not sure about you, Jose, but at that time, I thought, okay, I'm seeing really nice tactics, but this is getting out of hand and it might be a big Liverpool win. And it would be still nice for us to analyze as tactical nerds, but I thought it kind of killed the game at that spot. And if you would have told me that Brighton would have equalized 2-2, I would not have believed you, actually.
Yes, it's interesting because I think if I looking at the game in hindsight, I start seeing like the moments in which Brighton broke through the Liverpool defense, even in the first half and got nice chances. But when you were watching the game, it really felt like, okay, Liverpool are dominating these guys hard. And
yeah,
I don't know how they're going to survive it. I would say that that second goal was one of the worst bits of defending that we saw from Brighton during the game, where you get this cross from Oxlade-Chamberlain, which, by the way, we have to mention that Keita had to leave around the 20th minute injured.
So that's like the fourth central midfielder that is out injured now for them.
Yes. So the Ox puts the cross. Both Duffy and keeper Sanchez kind of failed to grab that ball. Mané heads it in pretty easily. And like you said, it looked like the game was not going to go in the right direction because Liverpool were still quite good in possession. Because that's the thing, like, so generally, Brighton were kind of trying to press from a 4-4-2. And again, they are pretty good at switching between the high pressing approach and kind of a more of a medium block. But irrespective of that, Liverpool was always cutting through them. And I think a big factor was actually the mobility of Henderson from the sixth position, because it means that because he was always moving in such a way that it was easy to make passing combinations, like really short and quick passing combinations. And you saw that many times where you just had Ox, Henderson combining with Trent, combining with Salah. Firmino was also dropping deep to do that. And yeah, they got a lot of really quick passing combinations that cut through Brighton entirely. And then you usually send the ball to like Mane and Salah for the one versus one, which they really had a favorable one versus one against the Brighton defenders.
I thought in the entire first half, what I did not like about Brighton in this aspect was the pressing. I thought Liverpool played through them too easily. Mm-hmm. Lallana is a good presser, but I thought the guys on the wings were not narrow enough at times, so they could play through the lines, Liverpool.
Yes.
Did that quite nicely, actually. So in that aspect, I didn't think Brighton were top pressing in the first half.
Yes, and my impression too is that at least in the first half, Brighton was stretching themselves too much. So there was a lot of space. They left more space centrally, and Liverpool had more space in the center to do passing combinations. And the fact that you had Henderson and Firmino being really mobile and just moving around to like complete these passing combinations made it even easier for Liverpool to play through them. So that is something Liverpool did pretty well. And then once Liverpool pin you like against your own goal and in your own half, yeah, it can be really hard to get out. Yes.
So we get a big sliding doors moment in the 33rd minute when Liverpool score 3-0. A bit of a comical goal. Maybe you can explain how it went.
Yes. So this is an interesting approach because Liverpool had been trying to do this all game, like the whole first half, where the front three press really aggressively all the time to the keeper. This is on purpose because Brighton and keeper Robert Sanchez they're actually the team with most passes from the keeper per game. So Sanchez averages about 40 passes per game, which is the highest in the Premier League. So Liverpool knew that Brighton involves the keeper a lot in the passing and possession sequences. So they were very purposeful about sending the front three to press all the way to Sanchez. They had been trying to do kind of a pressing trap where they forced Liverpool center backs to pass back to Sanchez. And then one of the guys, either Salah or Mane, try to jump on Sanchez and try to force a mistake from them. And at the 33rd minute, this approach finally paid off in that they forced the back pass, and then Mane, who's like ridiculously quick in these kinds of pressing actions, rushed him, and then Sanchez couldn't pass the ball in time. It hit off Mane into the goal, but because it kind of bounced off Mane's hand, it was ruled out by VAR as a handball.
Which is awkward to me, because I think, first of all the technical stuff you said, I totally agree with it. It's a good stat that you brought up about the goalkeeper stuff. I didn't know that. But yeah, for me, this was not a handball, because Mane tries to play the ball and then he gets it on his hand, but it's not intentional. So didn't think it was a handball anyway, but that's how it can go. And then in the 33rd minute, it would have been 3-0, and now we had a match. And then actually, a bit later, I think it's one of the best Premier League goals of the season so far that we got to see.
Was it intentional, though?
I'm not sure. If it was across, it was really misplaced, because it was really a thick contact on the ball. But also, I rewatched it. The Mwepu guy, he doesn't look at the keeper first. So he doesn't look if there is space to get it over. So I'm not sure, but I'm inclined to say it was. And he just did it on his intuition. But yeah, I'm not sure. If I had to bet, I'd say it was intentional, but not sure.
Yes. Something, by the way, that I really liked about that play is that before the goal, Brighton is trying to attack. The Liverpool block is pretty deep, is pretty tight, is hard to go get past. And Brighton players actually decide to pass back and try to attract more Liverpool pressing so that they open up the Liverpool block a bit. And then they have a bit more space. Then Mbappé has a bit more space to do that kind of shot slash cross that caught Alisson off guard. But I thought that was a really nice bit. And again, with a lot of teams, you see these things and you think, okay, this is just improvised or just a little thing. But these things that Brighton does, they are so well coached that you know that they've probably thought about these things and have trained these things at some point of like passing back and attracting the opposition press so that you can open them up first. And it was nice to see that principle in action.
Yeah, that was a really good move. So summary for me, first half, Liverpool didn't dominate, but clearly the better team, even though Brighton did interesting stuff tactically and had good intensity, but still Liverpool 2-0 up, could have been 3-0 and were the better team, but still the score is 2-1 at halftime.
It's really interesting that despite Liverpool dominating like possession and pressing so extensively through through a lot of the first half, it was 4 shots versus 4, 2 big chances versus 2 big chances. I thought it was weird because it felt like Liverpool had been really dominant in that first half and you would have expected the shot count to be much higher.
Which it wasn't. And we shouldn't forget the second minute where Brighton was 1 versus 1 with Alisson Becker, you know? So they had a big start again. Yeah, second half, actually, we see the same thing again because in the 47th minute, there is a disallowed goal from Salah. And then 1 minute later, there is a big chance for Brighton who look for the space behind Liverpool's defense and find it. So once again, the first half opened up really nicely and the second half opened up exactly the same. So that set up the second half very good because it would turn out to be a very good game in the second half.
And I think both teams were quite good at exploiting when the other was trying to press high. When at the beginning of the second half, Brighton tries to be aggressive. They are losing 1-2. They want to get that goal. So they start pressing a bit more aggressively from their kind of 4-4-2 setup. But in that situation, again, Liverpool managed to cut through them. I think Mane was beating Veltman or someone on that side on the 1 versus 1. And then you have the pass sent over to Salah, who's running in behind Cucurella. But in the end, he was offside and it was not allowed. But it's like Liverpool was still quite dangerous in these situations because, frankly, Brighton's back line is not that fast and Liverpool has Mane and Salah. So it is something that could have been easily exposed. I got to say that it's also a merit from Brighton that they were not reckless about the pressing. So this did not happen very often. And I think it happened this time at the start. And afterwards, Brighton decided to be a bit more conservative and not press that aggressively.
I have 2 questions for you about that second half. The first one is about a slight defensive adjustment Potter made, which I did not pick up watching live. What did you see? What was different from Brighton in the second half in terms of defending?
So my impression is that Brighton got, first of all, they got more centrally compact. And this is something that I saw throughout the game, but I saw it a bit more in the second half in that. So Mutter was trying to stay constantly with Trent. And again, the way Brighton defends is very man-oriented. So you had several situations where, okay, this was technically like a 4-2-3-1, but in many situations you had like, when they defended, you had like Mutter following Trent, and Trent can take very aggressive positions, and Brighton almost ends up defending in a back five. Then I noticed that in the second half, instead of say like a 4-2-3-1 press, they started looking more, I started seeing more like them pressing just with two up front, with March and Trossard up front. Then Lallana was staying in behind, and then you had the two midfielders. So I think they were trying to be a bit, so instead of just pressing in that kind of 4-4-2 and stretching themselves out too much, they were trying to pack a bit more centrally. And I think this is something that generally Potter and Brighton did better during the second half. They were better at packing the center, at preventing those Liverpool fast passing combinations. And they were better at knowing just when to stay back and when to close down their line so that Liverpool couldn't pass through them. So a lot of the so I think in the second half, they got better at forcing Liverpool to go out wide instead of making combinations through the center.
Interesting. Interesting. So that's one slight thing Potter did in game, and it kind of helped because I think Liverpool were less prolific on that side. The second question I had for you, and I hope it is the answer is as detailed as this as the other one was. In that second half, we saw Brighton playing out from the back, through the midfield, through the lines, quite easy. My question for you is, it's broad. I know that, and I don't think you have the definitive answer, but why were Liverpool so open at times when they were trying to press? Why could Brighton play right through them all the times?
So I think the main issue here is just the difference in midfield. This midfield with Jones, a really mobile Henderson who doesn't hold position, and Ox is kind of soft without the ball. And it doesn't do a lot of the work off ball that you would traditionally expect from a Klopp Liverpool midfield. Here, I would say that from a system perspective, the absence of Fabinho hurts a lot because he is a guy who knows really well when to go press and when to hold the position. Today, Henderson did not. Henderson won. He was being pretty aggressive about the pressing. Probably, in a way, it's also a system issue. Like, the front three were very aggressive pressing up to the keeper, and I think to compensate, Henderson was also being kind of aggressive, but a lot of the time, he was being really aggressive about pressing, leaving a lot of space behind him. And the thing is that also Henderson was not winning the duels. If you look at Henderson's ground duels, he only won one ground duel out of five. So not only was he being aggressive, he was not really getting anything out of that aggressiveness. So, and this was the story of kind of Liverpool's midfield. If you look actually at the ground duel percentage of Liverpool's forwards in midfield, they only won about 40% of their duels, while Brighton's forwards and midfielders won 60% of their ground duels. So that's the thing. Like and this was especially apparent in the second half, where Liverpool tried to go forward to press aggressively, but because they were not winning the duels and because midfield was kind of soft and did not know how to and was not winning duels and was not holding the position well either, it was easy for Brighton to go through. It boils down to defensive personnel, I would say. The absence of Fabinho in particular hurts a lot.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that this Liverpool midfield is just a bit softer, and that's the reason why it's harder for them to stop the opponent. But if we look at the equalizer Brighton scored, for example, it's exactly that. It's a 15-pass move, which starts from one penalty area and gets finished in the other. And I don't think that happens against Liverpool in full flow, in their full starting 11, you know?
I would agree. I'm also a bit surprised, too, that there were not that many like in-game adjustments about this, because the stuff about Cucurella almost always receiving free, Liverpool never fixed that throughout the game. And I would say that sometimes it even got worse. The second goal kind of comes from there because you had Brighton was having the ball. You have this really nice long pass from Sanchez, from the keeper, all the way to Cucurella. It bypasses the whole Liverpool forward and midfield lines that are trying to press. And then Cucurella gets the ball after that Sanchez pass. Then it gets them to Lallana. Lallana slips the ball to Trossard, and we have a really nice goal. One little detail that I really liked, well, that I found interesting, and that is Konaté struggling a bit with fitting in the defensive line of Liverpool, is that Motor was trying to make a run in behind. Konaté tries to stop there to hold the offside trap, but because he stopped there, he couldn't track Trossard's run. And it's an issue of Konaté still struggling to decide whether I hold the line or whether I still run back. But it's also Brighton doing a really good job in using runners to occupy and distract the opposition defenders and open up channels for other players. Because that run from Motor ended up opening up space for Trossard to run in behind Konaté and score. And again, these things, in other teams, they might be improvised, but in Brighton, you can be pretty sure that all of this is rehearsed and discussed.
I thought Konaté looked a bit out of place today, not only with the 2-2 that Brighton scored, where he was like totally out of position, but in other moments as well, you know, not holding the line with Van Dijk, clumsy moments. And it's only the third time they play together as a centre-back duo.
Yeah, I also think that Brighton in Spanish, we like to say that a team or a player smells the blood in the opponent, in that they knew that that sector with Konaté and Trent was the weak one defensively. So you have Cucurella always receiving behind Trent, and you have a lot of these guys, Trossard, Mora. Sometimes you have even the midfielder in Vepu trying to make runs behind Konaté. Like, I think they were very purposefully trying to exploit the back of Konaté in these situations. They knew that maybe he's still trying to fit in, and they really, really tried to exploit that.
Yeah, sure. So we get some subs for Brighton. Short before the hour mark, McAllister comes in for Bissouma, just meant for man, nothing happens for the rest. 66th minute, Lamptey comes in for Moder. Then March shift over to the left, Lamptey on the right. Now, I think somewhere after Brighton equalized, Liverpool switched to a 4-2-3-1 at one point, with Salah as the striker and then Firmino as the number 10, with Mané on the right and Oxford as the left winger, and then yes, Henderson and Jones as the double pivot. And then Jota was brought on for Firmino, and then Minamino was also brought on in the last part of the game. Didn't really change the match at all, though I do think they were even a bit more open in 4-2-3-1 than they had been in 4-3-3.
Yes, I don't think there were any huge chances for Brighton after, like, in the last 20 minutes. Not that I remember, like, any huge chances afterwards. But I remember there were a couple dangerous counters, potential counters with Lamptey making runs, but in the end they didn't quite materialize. But I would agree that despite Liverpool changes, they still couldn't create really good chances. I would say that Brighton also adjusted a bit. I would say that they were defending in a really compact, like 4-4. I almost call it a 4-4-2 or a 4 or even a 4-4-1-1. And again, they were defending deeper. They were still packing the center much better than they were doing in the first half. And it meant that it always forced Liverpool out wide. So the best Liverpool could do in those last 20 minutes was just cross into the box. And to be fair, center backs Duffy and Lewis Dunk can be a bit slow, but if there's something they're pretty good at, is that they're tall guys who are good at winning aerial duels. So
do you know what's interesting to me? That even in those last 10 minutes or even in injury time, Liverpool never put Van Dijk up front or something, and they were still attacking with Salah, Jota, Ox on the left, and Minamino, and they were still as you say earlier, trying to play the short pass and then out wide and then the cross. So not the early cross, but the late cross, and trying to get inside between the lines. They were never really going for the long ball approach. Always just, okay, we try to pass. And if they could have put Van Dijk as forward, or even Van Dijk and Konaté, and then you bring in another center back or something, but they didn't do that. It was not Koeman ball this time. It was just short passing and then out to the wing. I thought that was interesting, at least.
Well, and I think in the situation that Liverpool were in, if they tried to commit one of the center backs for this, they would have been even more exposed. Because, yeah, Brighton throughout the game always had that easy... The thing is that the whole combination of, like, get the ball to Cucurella, Cucurella gets it to Trossard, Trossard holds up the ball and then slips in a pass to someone, was extremely effective the whole game because Liverpool's midfield was so lax off the ball. Trossard is, in my opinion, my man of the match. And at no point during the game could Liverpool's midfield detect him. He was always receiving behind them, always get and always managed to get that ball in between the lines. And it was really a headache for the whole Liverpool defense, because once he's there, he can either hold up the ball, wait for the entire Brighton attack to come forward, or he slips in a pass to one of the runners. And that generated consistently either attacks from possession or even some counterattacks, although Brighton is not a particularly fast team on the counter. Sure. So all in all, I think even in these situations where Liverpool had more of the ball, they were trying to score the goal, Brighton still had a pathway towards goal, thanks to Trossard, thanks to their runners in Cucurella and Mensoli March, who I also thought had a really nice game. So all in all, a really complete and nice game from Brighton.
If you take out Liverpool-Manchester City, which was a crazy good game, was this the best game we reviewed this season with the podcast?
I think so. At least my favorite together with the City-Liverpool game.
I liked it a lot. It's nice to see all the tactics going on and slight adjustments and the high tempo, you know. And it's interesting for me what Potter can do somewhere else if you see how Tottenham are coached, if you see now how Everton are coached, if you see how Arsenal, okay, are doing well, but do they have an elite manager? I don't know. It'd be very interesting to me if he could make that step inside the Premier League to one step bigger, you know?
Yeah. And from your perspective, like right now, Brighton are fifth. Do you think they can hold this? Do you think this is kind of the ceiling of what they can do?
To be honest with you, we once had a Premier League winning team that played Huth and Morgan together. But I think in overall, there was lacking quality in some parts of this squad. And I think centre-back duo is a thing. I think winger quality is a thing. But if those guys like this, if they end in the middle of the table, they've done really, really well, you know? So I think that's something we should admire them for. And we are hardly the first one to notice this, but last season, everyone in the analytics space watched the expected goal numbers from Brighton every week, and they saw that Brighton were just criminally bad with their finishing, and that just threw them back a couple of spots in the league table. And this season, that seems to be kind of corrected. And I think they should be around 10th in the table at the end of the season, and then they've done really, really well.
I would agree. Like, if Brighton ends 10th, I think they've done pretty well given their squad talent. I mean, this is not a squad with, say, fast defenders. It's not a squad with attackers that are like super great at one versus one. It's also not a squad with midfielders or defenders that are really like press resistant. So it really is not, like, if you compare it to a lot of other squads in the Premier League, it's not that good. It's like, it's mid-table. And the fact that they can do these kinds of games against the best teams in the league says, to me, it definitely says a lot. Now, my next question would be, how do you see Liverpool right now? Are they still your title favorite? Or do you think City could be better? Do you think Chelsea can catch up to them? How do you see the title race right now?
It's awkward, right? Because in the moment, everyone talks about the Premier League as being three teams in the race. Chelsea, City, Liverpool. They all have their own unique kind of thing going on. If we talk a little bit about expected goals, for example, Chelsea are conceding basically nothing at the moment, even though they were shipping in big chances. So something funny is going on there. That will be corrected shortly. Just like last season, Liverpool just have injuries. And I'm not sure if that's training methods. I don't think so, but it can be. But they just have a lot of injuries in crucial positions, so that's going to hurt them a lot. And City seem, to me, the least affected by anything. But then out of the blue, they lose against Crystal Palace, you know? So
yeah.
It's awkward for me. I think those three are the best. If I had to pick one, I'd say City would win it. But I think within considerable time, I think Liverpool will be second after City and Chelsea will drop off a little bit because things are not going well at Chelsea, but people are not noticing it yet.
I would agree. I think the thing is that with Chelsea, it's still, in some ways, it was still a weirdly constructed squad. Tuchel has done a good job making the most out of it. And it's not like it doesn't have good players. It's just the fit among all these players is sometimes tricky. Tuchel has kind of figured out ways around it, but it's different from the squads of Liverpool and Manchester City, where it feels like the pieces really, really fit really nicely together. And to me, yes, Liverpool and City are still a step ahead of Chelsea. The main doubt with Liverpool is, yes, then they have the injuries, and we can already see this, like Fabinho being injured. Definitely hurts. There were situations in this game where Liverpool could have really used Thiago to rack up more passes, to keep more possession and control the game and slow down the game. They didn't have Thiago. And yeah, the injuries are still a problem for Liverpool this season. So I would say that to me, Manchester City are still the team that are most likely to be robust, that will be most consistent, will play more consistently, and will be less affected by injuries because of how deep their squad is.
Nice to look back on that at the end of the season. So then we have some podcast news, Jose, because it's going to be a bit different the next couple of weeks. Next week, I will do it with Joel. We will do the Manchester Derby. That's already been decided.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are going to Maastricht.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a nice city. Good restaurants and cafes. What's the word in English? Horeca, you know?
Oh, yeah. The best, like, hotel, restaurant,
best cafe. Restaurants, cafes, and bars of the Netherlands. So that's nice.
Oh, that's good to know.
Then 1 week afterwards, I'll be in Sweden. So no podcast there. Maybe you can do something with a guest or with Joel. Who knows?
Uh-huh.
And then we actually go into unknown territory because then I get ACL surgery. And maybe I would be out for 2 weeks.
Too bad you don't have like elite sports doctors that can cure your injuries in half the time.
Even though people like to complain about it, healthcare in the Netherlands is really good. So not worried about the surgery and the physiotherapist and stuff, but it's not like a professional revalidation, no. But I hope, I'd be happy if I'm out for a week, you know? But it can be 2 weeks. I don't know.
Yeah, so we will see. So this is just to let the listeners know that, well, next week there will be a podcast. Then the next 2 weeks, we'll see.
We'll see what happens. But again, I said this last week. If you are still listening, thanks so much. You are a big fan. And who notices the difference between my voice today and 1 week ago? That's a good question for the listener as well.
I will leave that one to the listener. I know what the difference is, but I cannot say it.
I know it too. 15 beers. That was the difference.
Ah, I see.
Hey, anyways, I'm off with wishing you a good time in the south of the Netherlands, which has a great eating culture and drinking culture. And thanking the listener and also thanking Potter and Klopp for putting together two brilliant teams, which put together a brilliant match for us to analyze. So that was very nice.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed reviewing this game. And as usual, always enjoy talking about football with you. So thanks, Eric. And thanks to everyone else for listening. So see you around.
See you around. And I will be back with Joel next week. Bye-bye. Thanks so much.